I'm going to focus mainly on gravitational waves from inflation, the way we can use gravitational waves to test the equation of state of the universe, and the phase transition and strings. In the second part of my talk, I'm going to discuss other kind of sources like compact binaries made of black holes or neutron stars that can also be used to test cosmology or gravity. And all along my talk, you will see that there is a lot of complementarity between the different gravitational wave experiments since they span a very large frequency band. So I want to start reviewing the status of the detectors today and also the prospect for the future, for the near and the long future. So in this plot, which maybe you don't see very well, I'm plotting the equivalent strength noise in measured in the inverse of the Earth to the power 1/2 as a function of the frequency for the three LIGO detectors. And the detectors are part of an international network today, together with the European detectors GEO and VIRGO. They've been taking data for 2 years at design sensitivity, which is shown here as the dashed line. The blue curve actually is above the line just because it's a 2 kilometer interferometer. It's the one in Hanford. The other two are 4 kilometers. And they've been taking data for the last few years, but during the last 2 years, since November 2005 until last November, they were working at design sensitivity, and the data are now under analysis. The last paper that has been published by the collaboration actually refers to the previous run, the so-called S4 run, that lasted just for 1 month, and put an upper limit of omega, gravitational waves of this amount. You will see the significance of this value later on in my talk. And the data of S5, which is the last run of 2 years, have been partially analyzed, and results have been, in fact, announced at the AES meeting last January. And only the first 14 months have been analyzed, and a preliminary upper limit has been put by the collaboration. This value here, which is quite interesting because, as you will see, it's actually approaching, actually has reached the B-band nucleosynthesis bound. At the moment, the LIGO interferometer are under commissioning to improve the sensitivity for so-called enhanced LIGO, which will be a factor 2 of improvement. Data will start again, taking again in almost 1 year. Advanced LIGO has been now funded by NSF, and it should start operating in 2013. And the research and development of even next generation of detectors, of LIGO detector, the third generation detectors, is now already started. Just a few words, I will actually talk about this also later. There are some examples of detectors in much higher frequency range, which is the megahertz, which is interesting for some kind of sources, like the one that comes from, for example, the end of inflation preheating. And hopefully, maybe in 15 years or more, we will have a space-based detector, Lisa. Okay, so in the first part of my talk, as I was saying, I will review the possibility of testing what I will call here the primordial dark age of the universe, which is the age that corresponds to a temperature above, let's say, the Big Bang nucleosynthesis time, where the temperature was about 1 MeV, 1 second after the Big Bang. And this era here cannot be probed in other way, as we know, because other particles start streaming at higher, at lower values, lower temperatures. And so the gravitational waves are the only way we can really get information about what happened at this this stage. I also want to stress, but this is quite well known, the fact that they are very weak, they don't interact much with matter, so they are very clean cosmological probes. And before starting discussing some of the physical processes, I want to remind you that quantities are what are the characteristic intensity and frequency of the Rayleigh gravitational waves. The intensity is generally represented by the tensor power spectrum. You may be more familiar with it. But in my talk, actually, I will describe it in terms of the so-called gravitational wave energy spectrum, which is just the energy density in gravitational waves per logarithmic wave number interval, and then divided, normalized by the critical energy of the universe. They can be related to each other. Now, this intensity can be already bounded by some important, in fact, phenomenological bounds. I think the most important one are the one that come from Big Bang nucleosynthesis. It's a bound on the integral of omega produced before the Big Bang nucleosynthesis. And this bound comes from the fact that at the time of BBN, you don't want too much energy density in gravitational waves because it could alter the expansion of the universe at that time, spoiling the abundance of the light elements. And this bound, it's a bound that goes up to a frequency more or less of 10 to the minus 10 Hz, which corresponds to the Hubble radius at the time of Big Bang nucleosynthesis. A similar bound has been recently actually obtained using the CMB, because from the power spectrum of the CMB, you can also compute how much energy density there was in matter and in radiation, and so you can bound also the amount in gravitational waves. This was a paper by Smith, Pierpaoli, and Kamionkoski that came out a few years ago. And this bound, it's similar, I mean, it's compatible, it's of the same order of magnitude of the BBN, slightly higher, depending on, I cannot go here into the details, but what is interesting is that it extends at smaller values of the frequency, because the Hubble radius at the CMB was larger, okay? Was larger, so the frequency is smaller here. So then we have the Kobe bound. We have also bounds from millicycle pulsars. The fact that if there is a gravitational wave that passes between the pulsar and the Earth, it will alter the time of arrival of the pulses. And so you can put a bound on the amount of gravitational waves that you expect here. And there are also more recent results from this paper by Genet. Okay, so the first mechanism I want to talk about, which is, I think, quite familiar to this audience, is the production of gravitational wave from inflation. And I want to remind it very quickly because I want to point out a few aspects of it that I'm going to use later on in my talk. So this background can be computed, stochastic background can be computed by just linearizing the Einstein equation and realizing that introducing the canonical field psi related by H by this relation, A is just the scale factor, the perturbation satisfy, the canonical field satisfy this equation, which is the equation of an oscillator with a mass that depends on time. And what happens is that for all the time the fluctuations remains inside the Hubble radius, it doesn't feel really that the expansion, that the universe is expanding. And nothing really happens if you work out the solution for H. Actually, this corresponds to this case here. H in amplitude decreases like 1 over A. However, as soon as the wavelength becomes of the order of the Hubble radius, it goes outside the Hubble radius. It remains constant for all the time it is outside the Hubble radius. And then when it re-enters the Hubble radius, first of all, it's less damped with respect to the case it was always inside the Hubble radius. But more importantly, because the vacuum has changed, you have a mixing of positive and negative frequency, and the negative frequency can be interpreted as the production of gravitational waves from vacuum. Okay, and so what is important here is two instants of time, which is, in fact, I stress it also in this other plot where I'm plotting the Hubble radius as a function of the scale, the inverse of the Hubble radius as a function of the scale factor. There are these two very important points which imprints information on the gravitational wave spectrum, which is the time at which a fluctuation goes exit the Hubble radius and when it re-enters the Hubble radius here. Now, these are quantities for the power spectrum that you can compute, for example, in single phase roll-over inflation. And besides the value of the power spectrum at this point, what is very important, especially if you want to compute the spectrum at very short distance, is the so-called transfer function. that goes between this point, and this point very small frequencies or very small frequency or larger frequencies we will see in a moment for LIGO detectors. Now, because the Hubble radius it is slightly increasing in time during inflation, for example, in slow inflation, the primordial spectral density, if you use the consistency relation, is going to be reddish. Okay, so it's flat or reddish. The computation of this transfer function has been redone quite accurately during the last few years by several groups. I think driven by the fact that now the detectors, gravitational wave detectors are working, so we need much more accurate predictions. And I'm showing you some plots from this paper by Boyle, Steinhardt, and Turok. They use as their here called minimal model, chaotic model of chaotic inflation, but then they allow extra degrees of freedom and they show how the spectrum can change. Just to give you an idea, LISA is here, advanced LIGO is here, and so if the spectrum is really red or flat or reddish, only post-mission mission like the Big Bang Observatory could detect it. But again, what I want to stress is that whereas the CMB is sensitive to long wavelengths that re-enter, in fact, at low temperature after the Big Bang nucleosynthesis, the gravitational wave detectors that are here are sensitive to short wavelengths that re-enter at much higher temperature, okay? So much before the Big Bang nucleosynthesis. And computing quite in detail the transfer function, you can also see details here in the spectrum that were computed by these people. So, for example, Weinberg in 2003 pointed out the fact that when the, when the gravitational waves re-enter the Hubble radius, they can be affected by the presence of neutrinos, that's free-streaming neutrinos, that can act as energy momentum anisotropic stresses, a right-hand side term in the equations, and this can create some deviation from the spectrum. And at the scale of the laser interferometers, because these are much higher, probe much higher temperatures, if at this time, when the fluctuation re-entered the Hubble radius, you had some X particle, not neutrinos, that could create this effect, you also will have an effect here imprinted in the spectrum. Now, what I want, actually I'm going to skip this, maybe I will come back to this later. I want to point out now the fact that, again, the fact that the spectrum has imprinted in it this information about these two moments of the cosmic history, when the fluctuations around the wave number k came exit the horizon and re-enter it. So we have been re-looking at this problem recently with Lat and Boyle, and you can actually see that the gravitational wave spectrum can be symbolically, schematically written like frequency with this power, and the blue power is connected with the equation of state or the average equation of state between the wave number k and the scale factor at the time of Big Bang nucleosynthesis. And this other factor here, which is the primordial spectral index, is actually related, or the average spectral index, is related to the equation of state of the universe at exit. Now, if you are more conservative and you think that at the end of inflation, soon after inflation ends, the radiation era started, then you end up with a spectrum that I showed you before. However, if you assume that, in fact, little we know about what happened between the end of inflation and, for example, the time of Big Bang nucleosynthesis, where we are sure that the radiation era already started, then you can introduce a free, if you want, equation of state that describes that era. And if that equation of state is stiffer than radiation, which is means W larger than one-third, then it will dominate at that time, and this will have an important effect on the spectrum. And by the way, even if this is not the standard picture, there have been in the literature some examples of this that comes back to papers by Grishow in the 70s, but even the model of quintessential inflation by Peebles and Vilenkin was actually using an equation of state soon after inflation, which was W equal to 1. And the effect of this is the following. If you now plot again omega as a function of the frequency, if you look at this line here, this line will have a primordial spectral index zero for a certain time. But suppose that before the Big Bang nucleosynthesis, you assume that the equation of state was not radiation, but was something else. Then, depending on the value of W, the spectral index here is going to change. And even if the experiments like LIGO and LISA are not going to detect it, you can at least put a bound on the equation of state of this, at this time. And actually, you can play also with the primordial spectral index. You can also say that primordial spectral index is not, in fact, zero or reddish, but blue, which happens in some model of bouncing universe. And in this case, also, you can constrain the primordial spectral index, and so the equation of state at exit, again, using direct detection with laser interferometer. Another thing I wanted to point out is the fact that this is quite, I think, quite interesting. If you combine together the CMB and the Big Bang nucleosynthesis bound, you get actually an interesting bound, again, on the equation of state in the primordial dark age. This goes in this way. If you consider the Big Bang nucleosynthesis bound that I rewrote it here, and assume that the CMB at very large scale is going to determine R. It could be 0.1, 10 to the minus 2, 10 to the minus 3. It doesn't matter because this curve is not going to change much. If you take the relation between the primordial spectral index and the parameter alpha here, and here there is R, these are just coefficients, and you plug the values that come from the Big Bang nucleosynthesis bound, you obtain this line here. And if the CMB detects something, detects a value of R here, N and W have to be in this region below this line. So if the CMB experiment detects a non-zero R, you get immediately an upper bound on the equation of state W during the dark age. And if you assume, for example, that the spectral index is zero, as we think in single field inflation, and chaotic inflation, as I was showing before, for example, W, that could be the upper bound on W could be one of these values depending on the value of R. Okay, so this is for what concerns gravitational waves from inflation. Now I want to quickly discuss a few other processes that could have produced gravitational waves that also had a lot of new papers during the last few years. One is probing the end of inflation, in particular preheating. This goes back to a paper of 10 years ago by Klebnikov and Kachev of 97, where they first realized that during the phase of preheating, where the inflaton field oscillates around the minimum of the potential, the inflaton couples to other fields and can pump energy to these coupled fields. And if you write again the equation I was writing before, now you have a right-hand side, which is due to the anisotropic stresses of these fields to which the inflaton couples. And this phase is highly non-thermal. You can create very strong inhomogeneities, can then produce gravitational waves. Now, the spectrum peaks at a frequency which is fixed by the energy scale at the end of inflation. In fact, you can compute, just following the paper by Dufault, that the gravitational wave spectrum is just reshifted today. It's 10 to the minus 6, and then what matters here is the scale of the inhomogeneity square divided by the Hubble radius at the time of preheating. Now, there have been, in fact, several groups that have been investigating this spectrum, which is also stochastic. In chaotic inflation, the different groups that I listed here found, in fact, a spectrum which is more or less, they agree with each other with some differences, but not very big. But what you notice here is that the frequency of the spectrum, it's actually a very high frequency of the order of 10 to the 7, 10 to the 8, 10 to the 9 Earth, where there are no experiments at the moment. But as I was saying at the beginning, there are some examples of laser interferometers that now have been built, but they are operating at much higher sensitivity. I mean, they don't reach this sensitivity for the moment. And I want to stress, in fact, that this, so it's very good that we have already some examples of detectors that are working at this sensitivity, but it's very hard to reach these sensitivities because the noise spectral density is related to omega through this equation here, which is inversely proportional to the frequency square. And so if omega is the same, if you go at higher frequency, you really need a very, very small or good sensitivity in order to measure your background. I'm sure that, I mean, in the future, people, I mean, these experiments are going to improve, but for the moment, they don't have enough sensitivity. So for what concerns hybrid inflation, there could be, in fact, a hope to have a signal at much lower frequency. And actually, here, at the moment, there are no definite, in fact, results, so not all the parameter space has been investigated. The spectrum, in fact, depends on the trajectory that the two fields in hybrid inflation are going to follow. And, for example, in these two cases of high inflaton velocity or low inflaton velocity, the spectrum has a different dependence on the parameter lambda. And, in fact, for example, in the case of low inflaton velocity, if you tune your lambda to a very small value, you can have a signal which is in the frequency band of LIGO with a good sensitivity, but it's really a tuning. And this is another example in the case of high inflaton velocity by this paper by Garcia Bellito and collaborators, where you can go at a frequency of 100 Hz, but the amplitude is very low, so could be seen only by the BBO. Okay, so I don't think I have time to go into the details of how much time I have, in fact, sorry. Ah, okay, so maybe I can say something about, yes, maybe I can say just a few words, although here there have been not new results during the last years. So another possibility of producing gravitational waves is in, is in first order phase transitions. So the universe could have been in a metastable state, which is depicted here, for some time, and in a so-called false vacuum, and through quantum tunneling, the universe could have tunneled through the true vacuum here, and these bubbles could collide, and by the collision, they could emit gravitational waves. And the spectrum in this case is mainly described by two parameters, beta and alpha, the bubble nucleation rate per unit volume, and the jump in the energy density, which is experienced by the order parameter. Now, you can compute that for the electroweak phase transition, which happen at this temperature, the frequency is in the Lisa band. However, in the standard model, we think that we believe there is no first order electroweak phase transition because of the X mass, which is larger than the mass of the W. So there have been studies to, which have shown that going in minimal supersymmetric standard models or next to minimal supersymmetric, you could have omega values that are actually in this case is too small, but in this case could be in the Lisa band. However, a couple of years ago, Grosjean and Servan have revisited this problem, considering the fact that the knowledge of the electroweak phase transition will be proved at the LHC. In the meantime, new models for the electroweak symmetry breaking have been proposed, and the X sector could be different from the one that led to this conclusion here. And so they did an analysis which is more model independent, and they work out the signal for different cases of the temperature, which you see here. This is the LISA BBO, and actually this is the third generation of LIGO detectors, even not the second one. And maybe the most interesting thing of this background is the fact that in this frequency band, it can hide the background from standard inflation, which is somewhere in 10 to the minus 15, okay? Okay, so before moving to the examples of the binary, the compact binaries, I want also to discuss briefly what we expect from cosmic strings, from either stochastic background or burst. So cosmic strings could have been produced, formed at symmetry breaking phase transitions, or also in like superstrings in collisions of brains in some scenarios of inflation, like brain inflation. They are characterized by this tension, mu, and they are quite relativistic. They can oscillate, they can form, in fact, a network of strings, they can oscillate, and they can disappear because by the oscillation, they can emit gravitational waves. And these are the gravitational waves that we would like to detect. And the field, actually, the expectation, the prediction of the gravitational wave signals, of the gravitational wave signal, received a lot of attention at the beginning of 2000 by realizing, first in this paper by Berezinski and then Damour and Vilenkin, that actually this network of strings could be characterized sometime by the emission of sharp bursts of gravitational waves, which are emitted by CASP and kinks. And this can change, in fact, the nature of the background, no longer making it Gaussian. But also, on one side, we could try to detect this sharp gravitational wave burst. And on the other side, all the stochastic background, which is produced by the network of strings. And this figure is from a paper by Siemens and collaborators. It shows the probability to observe at least one event in 1 year in LIGO. And the different curves corresponds to, well, maybe here you don't see, but this is basically 1, and this is 10 to the minus 2. And the different curves corresponds to different values of the parameter that can characterize the string network, like, for example, the tension of the string, the reconnection probability, the loop size, etc. At the moment, given the sensitivity of LIGO, actually people can already put some bounds in the parameter space. For example, this is a plot, which is an update from this paper by Siemens, Mendig, and Crichton. For a reconnection probability of p to the minus 3, this is a plot of epsilon, the size of the loop, and g mu. Here you see, for example, the S4 run, it was just one month. The S5, the first 14 months, is excluding, for example, this region here. The full run of S5, either using the 2 interferometer in Hanford or the 1 in Hanford, the 1 in Louisiana, will exclude, for example, these regions here. And here there are also results from Pulsar, which is this line here, B-band nucleosynthesis, the CMB, and the search of LIGO just using a burst, which is showed actually, I think this one is actually showed here, I believe. Yes, here. Okay, but in order to this prediction made actually more robust, we need actually more robust result for the distribution of loop size in the string networks. Okay, so in the last part of my talk, I'm going to now discuss the what we can do for testing cosmology using compact binaries. So here now we move to much lower redshift, few z, not like before, and to astrophysical sources. So these are binaries composed of neutron star or black holes that spiraling toward each other and lose energy because of the emission of gravitational waves. In fact, they are the most promising sources for LIGO. It was realized 20 years ago, that these binaries can be seen as standard candles. Call them here standard sirons, just because with respect to the electromagnetic signal here, the gravitational wave signal is in the acoustic region. So they are also called standard sirons. And it was realized, in fact, that these inspirary binaries can provide a self-calibrated absolute distance determination to the source. And why this happens? You can compute the gravitational wave signal as a function of time from these sources. At living order, this is just compute, you can compute it just taking the second time derivative of the quadruple moment of the source. And so you get a factor here, which is just the cosine of twice the orbital frequency. And you have an amplitude here that depends on the angles, symbolically the angles that describe the orientation of the binary with respect to the detector. And you have an amplitude part that depends on time. Phi dot is just the frequency, the orbital frequency. M is some combination of the mass of the binary. And then everything here is divided by the distance between the Earth and the binary. So if you can, and this is what you can do with the detection of gravitational wave, if you can detect and extract the masses, the angles, and you can extract how the frequency changes in time, then you can get the distance. And what you cannot get, however, is the redshift from the measurement, because all the quantities like the mass are multiplied by 1 plus z. And so you cannot extract the redshift from the measurement. However, you can do something interesting in terms of the measurement of d. For example, sorry, this is really very small. This is a simulation of 10,000 binaries that have different location in the sky of a mass 10 to the 6 solar masses at the redshift of 1. And this is how you can, how well you can determine the location in the sky, delta theta, in arc minutes. Remind you that the diameter of the moon seen by the Earth is 30 arc minutes, okay? So you don't do, in fact, very well with these detectors in terms of location in the sky. But still you can get a determination of the distance. And by the way, this is done with LISA. Determination of the distance between a few percent, but also goes up to 10%. However, if you can get the redshift, and so you can locate the sky, the binary in the sky, and this you can do for, in the case of neutron star, neutron star binaries, if you can detect the, for example, if they could be progenitors of gamma ray bursts, or if you have a coalescence of black holes, you can have electromagnetic counterpart just before or after the merger, then this plot here even improves for the distance. The distance can be computed with much smaller, in fact, with much higher accuracy, 0.1%, 0.01 here, and even smaller here. So in principle, they are very good, in fact, standard candles. However, one has to remember that the waves propagate through the inhomogeneous universe, and they can be magnified or demagnified, so there is a weak gravitational lensing effect, and so the measurement is degraded unless you have a very high event rates or you can reconstruct the lensing mass distribution. Actually, this problem is there also for the supernovae, but for the, in the case of the supernovae, especially in, for the future experiment or the one that we heard just before my talk, you have many supernovae, and so you can actually, with your sample, you can actually get rid of the lensing effect, just it will be averaged out. However, in the case of, for example, LISA, actually this is not possible because we don't expect of the order of thousands of sources. It could be, but it's not within the expectations. In any case, you can do something interesting. In this plot that I took from this paper, this is the plot of the equation of state today of the universe. This is W, sorry, and this is omega M. And this contour, the solid one, are the 68%, 95% confident regions using 100 massive black hole binaries in this range of redshift. And what you don't see here very well are the dashed line that would correspond to 3,000 supernovae in this region of redshift. So you cannot do better than what you do with the supernovae, but you can do something interesting and you can compare, in fact, the results and hopefully find, consistency. Another way in which you can use the standard candles to probe, actually in this case, gravity, it's an idea that was proposed just last year by Defaye and Menou. And the idea of testing theories with extra dimensions, you can build, in fact, so the idea here, sorry, is the fact that you can have modification of gravity at very large distances, for example, distance that I call here RC, and a distance larger than this, you could have a leakage of gravity in the extra dimension that will modify the fact that H now doesn't go like 1 over D, but goes like 1 over D to the this power. And so you can build a gravitational Hubble diagram, which they did here in this plot, and you can contrast it with the electromagnetic Hubble diagram. So these are actually all the supernovae here. This line here is with W minus 1.05. And these are three examples that you can obtain in these models in which you modify gravity at scales larger than RC, with RC varying between 2 and 8 gigaparsecs, and depending also on the way in which you go, I mean, how the model varies when you cross the scale RC, either steeply or more smoothly. And you can have here different curves. So my last transparency is the last test, in fact, that you can do, which is more on fundamental physics using binary black hole system, not like standard candles now. But as I was saying before when I was explaining the gravitational wave signal that you obtain from a binary, what we really measure in the detector is how the phase of the gravitational wave varies in time and how the frequency varies in time. And there are predictions from general relativity for how this frequency varies in time. So there is a leading order prediction, which is just the effect, the 2.5 post-Newtonian effect comes from the radiation reaction. You can have post-Newtonian corrections, but you can have also effects that come from the fact that if you have a scalar tensor theory, and here I choose just for simplicity Brunswick theory, the emission is not only due to the quadrupole emission, but you can have a dipole emission because of the presence of the scalar field. And you can have a term here that is going to change the way in which the phase or the frequency varies in time. And this depends on the Brunswick parameter and on the charge, this little alpha here. Actually, you need here a neutron star and a black hole because, as you know, a black hole cannot have a scalar charge because of the Noether theorem. And here you can see some bounds that you can put on the parameter omega if you take as a function of the mass of the binary. This is 10 to the 7, no, 10 to the 3, 10 to the, I don't even read the numbers myself, 10 to the 5, 10 to the 6, I think, here. And this is the Cassini bound. And these are the bounds that you can put if you detect the source, the gravitational wave from these sources here. You have a degradation of the bound if there are spin effects, okay, because they just correlate with this parameter here. And another thing that you can do is to put a bound if the graviton has a mass. We don't have a consistent model for that, but suppose that the graviton has a mass, then the gravitational wave propagation speed depends on the wavelength, and you have a distortion in time of arrival with respect to the general relativity case. You have another term here, which depends on the inverse of the Compton wavelengths related to the graviton. And again, using binaries, supermassive black holes here, 10 to the 4, 10 to the 8, you can put bound on lambda g. This is in kilometer. I forgot to put here kilometer. And this is 10 to the 14, 15, 16. The best bound on lambda g comes from the third Kepler law for the planets. And this is of the order of 10 to the 12 kilometers. Okay, so just to summarize, so Rayleigh gravitational waves at large and small wavelengths can carry information on otherwise unexplored physics between this temperature, 10 to the or scale, energy scales, hundreds of GV up to 10 to the 16 GV. The current direct detection experiments such as LIGO, as I showed you, have approached the BBN bound, in fact, and they have started exploring interesting regions of the parameter space. There is a possibility if there were a stiff energy component prior to the BBN to be, if not detected, constrained by the experiments like LIGO or LISA, there is this interesting bound that you can put if the CMB experiment detects a non-zero value of R, so you get immediately a bound on the equation of state during the primordial dark age. For the string networks, I was, in fact, underlining the fact that we can already explore some region of the parameter space. This is quite interesting, but we need more robust prediction for the string size, the size of the strings in the string networks, or the size of the loops. And I give you also some very briefly, really very briefly, some something that you can do in testing gravity and cosmology using compact binaries. On the other hand, I didn't discuss at all the fact that all the signals I've been discussing are cosmological, and in some of the frequency band, they actually compete with astrophysical signals. And if they are also stochastic, it's very difficult to disentangle one from the other. And this is particularly true for signals that are in the, for example, LISA band or in the BBO band. Okay, I finish here.
Thank you. Questions? Okay, thank you very much for this wonderful review. Thank you.